Hello and welcome to Soul Still Sold, a talking TV podcast. My name is Chris, and I can already tell that I'm going to have a hard time saying the name of this podcast. So, that's right, new show, Soul Still Sold, it's going to be a show where I talk about TV shows, sometimes with guests, sometimes on my own. It's going to follow the old Monster of the Week format, where we broke down an episode beat by beat, season by season, going through, talking all the details. I'm going to be approaching this with some shorter shows. So first up, I'm talking about the Apple TV series Murderbot. It's only 10 episodes. It's a fun show. I thought it would be a nice, easy way to launch this new project. After that, I will be covering various other shows. If you have recommendations, I am more than willing to hear your suggestions and maybe cover it for the podcast. So, a little background about Murderbot. It is a 2025 Apple TV show based on the Murderbot Diaries, a series of books written by Martha Wells. Wells herself is involved in the production of the show. I believe she's credited as a writer in pretty much every episode. And while there are, of course, differences from the books, the overall story translates fairly accurately from the page, so that's cool. The series is, how do you describe this? The series is set in like a futuristic sci-fi world, and it follows the story of a security unit, a SEC unit, and it's like an android-like construct made from cloned human tissue and advanced technology who has broken away from its programming. But rather than go on a murderous rampage like everybody expects it to do, our SEC unit protagonist, who refers to itself as Murderbot, just wants to hang out and watch its favorite shows. But if anyone finds out it has gained any free will of its own, it could spell the end of its very existence. So Murderbot must do its very best to, you know, appear robotic, appear business as usual, all the while becoming more and more human in some ways each day. He's basically like a jailbroken smartphone, except instead of being a phone, he's a killing machine. So, you know, not like a smartphone at all. But you get the idea. The first season of the show covers the first book in the series, which is 2017's All Systems Red. At the time of recording this, there are 8 books. I've read 4 of them. And the second season of the show, I believe, is in production now. So there's something to look forward to if you enjoy the show. Now, the books are super light and breezy. Most of them are like 170 pages. I guess they're closer to like novella length than they are novel length. But that makes them so easy to read. You just blast right through it. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. The show and books alike are kind of like a cross between like sci-fi thrillers and, I don't know, like deadpan comedies. Like there's definitely a lot of humor in the book without it ever like trying to be funny. Like it's not writing in jokes and having you laugh at them. It's just got kind of a humorous bent to it. There's obviously plenty of heart and emotion and all that kind of stuff sprinkled on top. Especially, you know, with the show's cast, there's a lot of great performances in this series. I'll give you the cast list now. We've got Alexander Skarsgård playing SEC Unit or Murderbot. We have Noma Dumizweni playing Mensa. We have David Desmalchin playing Garathan. Sabrina Wu playing Pinley. Akshay Khanna playing Rati. Tamara Podemski playing Bardwaj. And Tatiana Jones playing Arata. I should probably be adding a doctor to the front of everyone's name, Dr. Mensa, Dr. Garathan, but I just threw the names at you. So given the long introduction kind of needed for a new show, for covering episode 1, for filling in all of the plot points and talking about that stuff, I will only be covering 1 episode on this podcast. But after that, the plan is to do 2 episodes per week. So this will be episode 1 today, and then episodes 2 and 3 next week, 4 and 5 the week after, 6 and 7 the week after, 8 and 9 after that. And then finally, episode 10, the season finale will get its own episode to balance things out. But okay, without further ado, let's get into it with episode 1, Free Commerce, directed by Paul Weitz, written by Martha Wells, Paul Weitz, and Chris Weitz. Described as, on a fresh assignment, Murderbot's newfound free will leads to odd behavior, sparking suspicion from the Preservation Ox team. So, also, quick aside, I realize that I tend to refer to Murderbot as he, and I will probably continue doing that without realizing it throughout the podcast, due to in part being by it being played by Alexander Skarsgård. So I will likely go back and forth between calling Murderbot it and calling him he, though it's the creature, the construct, the creature, the construct. He's never given a gender in the book, like I just did in this sentence. Never called by any pronouns whatsoever. It's just an it, I guess. But I know I'm gonna keep calling him he. If that bothers you, let me know. That wasn't a sarcastic question. If that bothers you genuinely, let me know. All right, without further ado, let's get into it. We start with a flashback at mining station Aratake in the Corporation Rim. So what is the Corporation Rim? It's just a section of space owned by corporations. We're going to learn more and more. We're going to learn more and more. The world building is pretty loose in the series, in the books and in the show. And I kind of like that. Like, I get it's a futuristic society, corporations are running shit, we have advanced technology, and we're all out in space hopping from planet to planet, and that's kind of all you need to know, other than the fact that it is very much things are run by corporations. But we start the show off with voiceover from the SEC unit. This is a signature feature of the show, so Alexander Skarsgård is giving us voiceover throughout the entire show. That could get annoying, I think, in certain situations, but I certainly enjoyed it in this show. It worked for me every time. And this voiceover to start off is explaining how Murderbot here is at a rat party for a mining expedition. For the last 6 months, this SEC unit has been on security detail for this mining group. And we see what basically amounts to just like a big party all around him, with this SEC unit in his white armor, his, you know, obscured face, standing totally still amongst the rabble, looking very much out of place. He kind of looks like, I don't know, it's like a stormtrooper's look without the iconic helmet, but he does have a very interesting mask. It's never really described in the books or anything, as far as I'm aware. So it was definitely an interesting interpretation of it. It's this kind of like off-centered spiral design in the face with like one black eye hole on the side. Nothing in the center. There's no like mouth or nose on it. Nothing at all in it suggests a human face in any way. And I noted, as an anime fan, it looks like Obito's mask from Naruto. And I looked up like, oh, what's the significance of that mask? Does that come from some sort of, you know, mythology or anything? I didn't find anything. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist, but I didn't find anything. I didn't know if this was a reference to like a real thing in real life or just a similar design. Either way, it looks very inhuman and I think it works very well. So while all these people, these miners, they're partying, they finish their job, we can hear the SEC unit's inner monologue calling everyone around him assholes. And then we're shown how he has to do anything that they tell him to do because of the governor module inside of him, which controls his actions based on rules, regulations, and systems set up by the company that designed him, owns him, and essentially loans him out as equipment to these facilities or these groups. He is effectively a slave with no autonomy. He can only do what he's told. One of the drunk partygoers tells him to raise his hand. So we see him raise his hand. And then this guy lights a blowtorch under SEC Unit's hand. And SEC Unit just has to sit there and take it. He does actually have pain sensors. He does actually feel things. But he's not allowed to do anything. It's just like, oh, I have to do what he told me to do. I have to raise my hand. I have to sit here and let this blowtorch burn me. And now it makes sense why he's calling everyone here assholes. You know, many people, obviously, given any modicum of power over another individual, will not hesitate to abuse said power. And it's clear that this is not the first time that Murderbot has been subjected to this sort of treatment. And I mean, it's just literally a minute ago, like as the show opened up, we just saw someone puking on his shoes. You know, he isn't technically human, so he isn't treated as human. He is effectively equipment, which is why I should be calling him it and not he. Unfortunately for these miners, SEC Unit has spent every spare second of the last 6 months trying to discover a way to hack his governor module, to hack the thing that completely removes his free will, to break free from its control. And here now at this party, somehow he has finally achieved it. He's just like found some admin password that he was able to access, because he's got this whole computer database, effectively. Like, he's got access to the internet directly in his brain, and he's finally been, through whatever steps he's been taking, has finally been able to get this password and to unlock the chains that bind him. I don't know what the budget for this show was. My guess is that it's not particularly high. The only other, like, recent sci-fi stuff I have to compare it to is, like, Star Wars shows, which, I don't know. They clearly don't have that kind of budget. They don't have Star Wars Disney money, but I think they do make good use of the effects that they have, and much of what Murderbot is doing internally, like, you know, he's scanning things on the inside, going on the internet from his brain, basically. There's no, like, external effect, you know? There's nothing that he would be doing to show that what's going on internally. Like, he's standing here hacking his governor module, but he's just basically standing there totally still at the center of this party. No one has any idea what he's doing, but they do use these cool digital effects to show what essentially comes down to, like, computer code swirling around, flashing around his face, and, you know, floats in the air around him. Other people can't see it. It's for the audience's benefit, but I do really like that effect. It puts me in the moment with him. It would be very awkward if he was just constantly standing there doing nothing and we just had to imagine what was happening. But yeah, he was able to break free from his control. The time has finally come. He's free. It starts wondering what it should do. Now that Murderbot is free, well, he hasn't started calling himself Murderbot. He's about to come to that. He's standing there in the middle of the party of all these people that he basically hates, these people who have treated him like a slave. And he's like, maybe I should just kill all these people, steal one of their ships, and escape? I have my newfound freedom. I can do whatever I want. But first, more importantly, it wants to come up with a name for itself. And it settles on Murderbot after trying out a few things. A security unit is, of course, it's designed for combat. It's designed for security. He's just basically a suit of armor with combat abilities. He's got, like, gun turrets in his arms. Like, he's imagine if an Iron Man suit was a sentient being, right? Like, that's what Murderbot is. But yeah, he's settled on his name. And this kind of opening sequence ends with him saying to himself, "Let the adventure begin." And then we get to see our opening sequence, our theme music or whatever that plays here. And it's a fun little sequence. It shows it's showing security units being made on a production line before we see our sec unit break free. And he's, like, kind of swimming through the galaxy. He's just a little animated guy swimming through the galaxy, eventually landing on a planet with other people. And yeah, it's just a little kind of fun animation of some of the broad strokes of the show to come. When we catch up with Murderbot after the opening, he is on another mining survey job on another remote planet at the edge of the Corporation Rim. He, even though he got his freedom, he's now realized that the company that owns him, if it discovers that he has broken free, it's going to immediately capture him, have him incinerated, have him put into an acid bath. So he's realized, despite that first urge to just, like, kill everyone and escape, he's realizing, like, oh shit, I can't do that because I will die very quickly. So he's got to play it cool. And thus he finds himself on a new job with a new group of people, biding his time until the opportunity to truly escape presents itself. The greatest shackles are the ones we put on ourselves. Am I right? Is this thing on? Murderbot says he's working for a new group of assholes, except this group is different. They aren't driven by profit like everyone else he's ever worked for. They are, as he puts it, weird, which is how they ended up choosing him as their sec unit to begin with. And now we go back again. We get another flashback, this time to a place called Port Free Commerce, which looks like some sort of coral hive with these, like, corded tendrils of light jutting out from one centralized point that appears to be a moon or an asteroid or something. This is like a citadel built into an asteroid with all these tunnels of activity coming out of it where I guess people have colonized. I don't know. It's a port of free commerce. It's all about capitalism. It's all about making money. It looks like it's big enough to sustain an entire civilization. I don't know how big this place is actually supposed to be, but it's quite the spectacle. Murderbot's voiceover introduces us to a group of what it calls a group of hippie scientists. Very different from the usual types you see in a place like Port Free Commerce, apparently. They're a diverse group wearing handmade clothes who just want to explore and further their studies. But to fund their expeditions out into space, they need corporate backing and corporate insurance. That's where the SEC unit comes into things. They are basically told by this company that's, like, you know, insuring them or funding them or whatever, that they need to bring a SEC unit for protection if they want that funding. This is part of the insurance coverage, is you have to have one of these. However, this group, unlike everybody else that Murderbot has ever met, fundamentally disagrees with the idea of a SEC unit. They see it as enslavement, and they are not at all interested in hiring one. But again, if they want funding, they need insurance, and SEC units are part of that insurance, unfortunately. They don't really have much money. This group does not have much money to begin with. So while they are shown the shiny new SEC unit model, the latest and greatest, they end up having to choose the cheaper, worn out, older model that is our Murderbot. Mensa, she's the de facto group leader. She's kind of leading the conversation throughout this, as this group of, again, space hippies kind of sits there talking to these corporate insurance brokers. But when it comes to making a decision, their leader, Mensa, she kind of looks to the group to make a decision. She just says, you know, we need to come to a group consensus. I may be the de facto leader, but I'm not going to call the shots here. And then the absurd part comes in, where she gets up, has everybody come together, hold hands, and start, like, humming together, like coming to a consensus through this, like, almost spiritual looking ritual. It looks very absurd, considering they are essentially at a sales meeting. Like, this looks like they're at a freaking job interview, and here they are having this little holding hands moment. There is one exception to their group in Garathan. He is a man who is the closest thing that you could call to a black sheep of this group. He doesn't like the idea of going with the cheapest security option. He doesn't want to join in on their little hand-holding event, but they drag him into it anyway, and he kind of just goes along with the rest of the group despite having his initial disagreements. As Murderbot so aptly puts this, as he's kind of quote-unquote offline looking at them, he sees them doing this little ritual and just thinks, what the hell was that? These people are truly unlike any other group we will see in this show. In a world run by corporations, the idea of these kind of like free spirit hippies is more alien than anything that they're going to see on any of these alien worlds that they're going to. But at last, they come to their consensus, and thus they pick up our Murderbot, and we head back to the present day on this distant, uninhabited planet with this research team. And Murderbot sulking around that he has to continue pretending to just be a regular SEC unit going to work. So they've got this pretty, you know, sweet habitat structure that they set up for everyone to live in and work from. And Murderbot just spends his days doing patrols of the area and trying not to interact with any of these weird people. Just keep to himself, play it cool so that nobody gets suspicious, and just keep doing his thing. This group, they are from something called the Preservation Alliance, which is a planetary commune from outside the corporation rim. When they aren't doing their research projects, they spend their days here dancing, painting, engaging in art and love and all this kind of stuff, and otherwise just making merry while the SEC unit just looks on in silent confusion and disgust. We learn that Arada, the biologist, is married to Pin Lee, the lawyer, and Arada also has a thing for Rati, who Murderbot says is an expert on wormhole travel and who also makes his own jewelry. But Rati actually has a thing for Pin Lee, so there's this little triangle going on here, and all SEC unit can do is marvel at this absurd triangle of human relationships. He does not understand them at all. And it is fair to say, I think, in the show and the books particularly, that Murderbot is a pretty good representation of, like, a neurodivergent person, or a lot of, you know, readers and viewers certainly have felt that way. I wouldn't go so far to put any kind of like hard label on his behavior to, you know, call him autistic or anything like that. I don't want to say that that's what he is a stand-in for, or is he a representation of that experience, because I don't necessarily know that experience. But his inability to understand so many aspects of what is, you know, a quote-unquote normal people is fascinating to watch over the course of the series. Just the way that he processes information, how he deals with the people around him, how he reacts to certain things. A lot of people have found someone they can relate to in him. Next, we're told a little bit more about Dr. Mensa, the group leader. She is an expert in terraforming. We don't really get much more information on what terraforming is, but I assume it's about kind of molding landscapes to build upon. That's what it usually is in video games. Everyone in the group really does seem to admire her. She commands a lot of respect from everybody, despite how much, you know, love and care she seems to show for them. Everybody still seems to, not that love and kindness can't coexist with respect, but you know what I'm saying. Like, everyone loves her. She has 7 children back home. That's another thing that we learn. Garathan is an augmented human with implants that modify his neural capabilities and allow him to interface with data systems. Out of everyone's, his abilities come the closest to Sekunitz, who, you know, he has all sorts of sensors, trackers, accesses to camera, data, the internet, you name it. But Murderbot makes sure to let us know that Garathan is not as good at him. He does not have as much processing power. He's not as fast as him. He multiple times points out how much better he is than Garathan. It's like his one point of pride. And lastly, to the group, we are introduced to Bharadwaj, who is a geochemist who is secretly hoarding soap in her room. It's a little character detail. It's not really necessary, but it just goes to show how much Murderbot knows about all these people, despite not wanting to. He sees them all the time. He's like Santa Claus. He knows when they're awake. He knows when they've been bad or good. But that's all well and good. But it's basically just background noise to Murderbot, who has discovered with his newfound freedom, since hacking his governor module, that he has unlimited access to the endless archive of media that exists on the internet. And since the moment of breaking free from his governor module, he has watched 7,532 hours of content. Basically, he's got a second screen running in his brain at all times. He's just like me, for real. He's just constantly watching TV. Much of his understanding, in fact, of the world comes from all these shows that he's watched, namely his favorite show, The Rise and Fall of Sanctuary Moon. It's his, you know, his special interest, his hyperfixation, whatever you want to call it. It's his thing. He is obsessed with it. I mean, with TV in general, but mostly with Sanctuary Moon. And we do actually get to see lots of clips from Sanctuary Moon, and it is absolutely fantastically campy. I would watch it as its own show altogether. It's like Star Trek meets a soap opera. I don't know. There's always celebrity cameos popping up. It includes John Cho, DeWanda Wise, Jack McBrayer, Clark Gregg, and a few others popping up now and again. Now, I obviously know a lot of these people from nerdy things, but yeah, it was just so funny seeing these recognizable actors in just this bit part playing a fake show on a show. It's great. I love it. I love the Sanctuary Moon stuff. We're even watching a portion of Sanctuary Moon through Murderbot's eyes here, where John Cho's character is being accused of having relations with their navigation unit, this robot. So some stuff paralleling Murderbot's own experience as a bot among humans. And but he's interrupted from the riveting drama of Sanctuary Moon for a conversation between Arata and Bharadwaj. Or I should say that we're interrupted by it, because Murderbot, he can multi-screen, he can multitask, it's not a problem. They're out in the field. These two are out in the field. They're excavating. They're kind of down in a crater near their base camp. And Murderbot is just standing like 100 feet away from them at the top of the crater, just watching them. Bharadwaj mentions how creepy Murderbot is, and Arata reminds her that, hey, the Sekunit can hear us. And she's like, no, it can't. We're like 100 feet away from it. To which Murderbot responds in his voiceover with, I can. I can't hear them. I just don't care. And then he's back to Sanctuary Moon. Unfortunately, while distracted by the show, a threat appears on his sensors. He starts to try to warn Bharadwaj and Arata to run, but they don't listen, forcing him to leap into action just as some sort of giant centipede creature comes up out of the ground in this crater and attacks. And in fact, it takes a big old fat bite out of Bardwaj as it tries to eat her. Murderbot, he runs in, he starts firing lasers from his arm cannons that he has, and we go from this kind of like almost weird dry comedy set in a sci-fi setting to suddenly like it's an action show. He's blasted at this giant centipede, and he's able to drive the thing off. It almost eats him. He definitely gets eaten for a little while before blasting his way out, and it takes this creature takes a massive, nasty bite out of Murderbot's side. A wound that would very well kill a normal person instantly. But here, our Murderbot, he's totally unfazed. He's just standing there like, okay, cool. Like, literally like a humongous chunk of his guts are gone. I don't even know how he's standing up straight. Just physically, like the physical logic of it doesn't make any sense. There's so much of him missing. But yeah, he's just totally fine. He's got the injured Bardwaj tossed over his shoulder. But this is when he finally lets the mask slip, so to speak, or actually quite literally, because Arata, who she wasn't attacked, but she just watched her friend get nearly eaten. She was just surprised by a giant monster. She's just sitting there in total shock, unable to move. And the situation is desperate because that monster could come back any second. Bardwaj needs to be taken back immediately for medical attention. She's pretty injured. And Murderbot does something that no other sec unit is programmed to do. It comforts her. And he quite literally lets the mask slip. He brings his face down, or his mask down, and this is the first time in the show that we are seeing he has a face. And he shows her, indeed, that he has a human face. And he starts telling her in his robotic verse, everything is going to be okay. Please trust me. And he's looking in her eyes, and he's using this human connection. Well, he doesn't feel it, but he's making a human connection with her to kind of like set Arata at ease, to calm her down and to get her moving. And the rest of the team soon arrives to help. Everyone's rushing in, trying to do what they can to aid the injured Bardwaj. And Murderbot puts his mask back on and tries to pretend like none of that just happened. And during the big rescue, Rati tries to run back for the equipment that they left behind. But he's told that, hey, the equipment's not worth his life. Down in the crater, you know, that monster's still down there. It's dangerous. This idea of equipment not being worth your life is actually really brand new to Murderbot. He comes from a company and a culture in general of society that values profit over all else. So the idea of leaving expensive equipment behind in exchange for a human life sounds absolutely absurd to him. Of course, Murderbot himself is expensive equipment. That's how he describes himself. But that's besides the point. But now, unfortunately, Murderbot has gone off program, and he's very worried they will figure out what he's done, that he's disabled his governor module, and they will turn him into the company. Because even though he has rescued everybody and he saved the day, it's still like, oh, that was unusual behavior for him. And we see this scene of Murderbot, like he's on the hopper, is what they call it. It's this little like transport ship that they have that goes from place to place and hops from place to place. They're all inside of it going back to base camp. And we see Murderbot kind of turn away. He's staring at the wall, and then he turns back, looks at everybody, and one by one goes up to every single person on the ship, which is everybody in the group, and he kills them one by one. And the show sells this as actually happening for a minute, and then you realize that this is just a dream. It's his imagination of slaughtering everyone, basically just trying to figure out a way to get out of this situation. Not because he wants to kill them, he doesn't really have anything against them. He's just trying to run through every scenario of like, what's my best bet here to get out of this so I don't get sent back to the company and thrown into an acid bath. He does not want to kill people. He just wants to remain chill. He just wants to keep on watching his shows, but he will do what he has to stay alive. Or so he thinks. But they get back to the base. They rush Bardwaj back for medical treatment. And once she's kind of settled in, the group all gets together and they start trying to figure out what the hell just happened, because they have map data for the entire planet. They have intel on all of the flora and fauna, and most definitely they should have been aware of any predators in the area, any area that they were going to be doing research in. All of that should have been readily available, saying, hey, in that crater, you're going to run into a giant centipede monster. that's like just extremely normal stuff that they should have access to immediately. So why didn't they? Why did they not know that that predator was going to be there? We live in, you know, this show is taking place in this futuristic world where stuff like this just doesn't happen at random. SecUnit, who's just trying to stay away from all of this, he wants to go back to the security room or go do his patrol, really anything to get away from people for a little while. He's feeling very overwhelmed, overstimulated, if you will, and he's very worried about the fact that he showed his face to somebody. But Dr. Mensa is also very worried about SecUnit, considering that he's got a gaping wound in his side. So he's severely injured, but also, you know, he saved her people. And Dr. Mensa is nothing if not compassionate. And her baseline, from what we know of her so far, is to extend kindness and care to all beings, human or not. And as we already know, they morally are against even having a SecUnit, to having any artificial construct. They see them as people. So as a baseline, she sees Murderbot as a person. Meanwhile, Murderbot is like, nah, I'm cool. I'm fine. My wound is fine. I sealed off all of my arteries to stop the bleeding. Like, okay, cool. Nice. Again, his guts are just open. Like, it's like a little bit like synthetic robot parts, right? But it's like also he has a human body. He's part like a partially human body. So there's just this fucked up gaping hole in his body. And Dr. Metz is like, okay, cool. You say you're fine. Okay, cool. But you're still going to need some medical attention. So for now, you are off duty until further notice. She's just like, please go heal yourself or whatever you have to do. And Murderbot is like, hell yeah. He's super thankful that he can finally get away from them. And he's like, I totally got away with that whole helmet off thing. No one's going to know about this. My stunt worked. I'm not in trouble. Nobody has to cause any more trouble. It's time to go watch more TV and just chill out. But as soon as we cut back to the rest of the group, Grathen, he's sitting there. He's the augmented human. He's sitting there telling everyone that they need to shut down the SecUnit because it is malfunctioning. It's a malfunctioning piece of equipment. He clearly does not see it as a human being like everybody else does. And they're all very confused because SecUnit just saved all of their lives. He just did what he was designed to do. But Grathen says, no, I have the footage from Arada's feed showing the moment that, you know, Murderbot showed his face and started talking to her, calming her down. And we're seeing the footage now from Arada's point of view of how Murderbot was asking her questions to keep her distracted from her panic. Like, oh, where are you from? Do you have any children? Like, just any, like, banal conversation just to distract Arada from her panic. And to Grathen, this is weird as hell. SecUnits shouldn't act like this. They barely speak. They shouldn't be using empathy to help somebody. And sure, the effect might have been a good one. It might have been a net positive, considering the situation. But SecUnit is not acting normal. It's not designed to be nice. Also, hub system. This is like a security operating system, I guess, that they all have access to. I don't know if it's owned by the company or whatever. They refer to hub system a lot. It is like an internet database, effectively, that they are accessing at all times. And hub systems should have warned Murderbot about the predators. So, like, why did it take him so long to act? I mean, it did warn him. It did warn him at the last second, but he was watching TV. So, you know, he was a little distracted. But also, Arada, who, you know, was attacked, says nothing like what attacked them was even in the database. So hub system might not have even have that data available for reporting to them. So regardless of what happened, Grathen does not trust Murderbot. By definition, the SecUnit is a killing machine. And if it's malfunctioning, even if it's malfunctioning by showing empathy, it's still malfunctioning, and that could be bad for everyone. So, no matter how they slice it, they feel like they're in danger. The company is coming in a month to, I don't know, pick them up or bring in support. I'm not totally sure. They don't really explain that. But, you know, in a month, the company will be here. There'll be backup coming, essentially. But regardless, that's a ways away. That's a month away. And even if they launched their emergency beacon that they have, it would take at least a week for any help to arrive, which just shows how far out into the galaxy they are. So it looks like Bardwaj is in stable condition, and there is simply just too much at stake in their expedition for them to call it off now. Now, we don't exactly know much about the conditions of this expedition. We don't know why they're here, what's at stake for them. But obviously this group is very passionate about it, and they realize that they can't just back out at the first sight of trouble. Plus, they say that the SEC unit is basically company spyware. You know, the company would not want them shutting down their security unit that they're probably using to spy on them anyway. So, like, they can't do anything too hasty here. But it's just funny, you know, it's like, all right, well, for now, we kind of aren't going to do anything. We're just going to take a breath and just keep looking into everything. Everybody relax for a second. And then here, Arata and Rati joke. I think Rati's like, I didn't know it had a face. And Arata's like, yeah, you know, SEC unit's kind of got a sweet face. It's just something about it. Like, they're just the type of people they are. They're immediately endeared to this thing. They just immediately like him. And you could tell, like, it just feels like they'd be a fun group of people to hang out with. Like, Rati is a jokester. Like, they just seem like a good-natured group of people. Garathan's, like, the one emo of the group who's, like, he's on edge. Meanwhile, Murderbot, he's outside, but he has overheard and he's actually seen everything because he has access to, like, a million cameras. It's some real Peep and Tom shit, except he does not care at all. In fact, he does not want to peep on anybody. He does not want to be Tom. He's not interested in being Tom. He's not interested in peeping. He doesn't want anything to do with it. He just has access to all the cameras at all times. It's not his fault. And actually, we see him now. He's not outside. I said he was outside. He's in his, like, security cube. I don't know what the hell they call it. But he's in, like, a repair dock thing. He's, like, kind of, like, hooked up to this machine. He's standing there. And this machine is, like, automatically repairing him. It's like stitching him up, kind of. His human parts are being regenerated by this machine, and it does not seem like a pleasant process whatsoever. It does seem like there's actually quite a lot of pain involved in the regeneration process, but it's showing that he, you know, his human parts can be regenerated, and his mechanical parts or synthetic parts or whatever are being fixed, and he's going to be fine, but it's painful. So in the meantime, he's watching Sanctuary Moon to distract himself. A short while later, he is interrupted from his show by Dr. Mensa, who calls for him. Hub System has told her that he's at 80% recovery or 80% alertness or whatever right now. So she's like, hey, it seems like you're doing okay now. Could you maybe come out and talk to us for a few minutes? And he tries to kind of get out of this. He can't outright say no, so he has to try to come up with like a real excuse. And he says that his armor is still being repaired. And in fact, we do see his armor on the ground. It's all shredded up from when he got bitten open. Any excuse to avoid human contact. But she tells him, no, that's okay. You don't need your armor. Just put on like a crew uniform. There should be some extra crew uniforms in there. You can put one on. Just dress like a normal person. This idea is absolutely mortifying to Murderbot. His armor is more like almost like social armor than it is like body armor. Like, it is protecting him from having to interact with people, from having to be present. It is the shield between him and any other person that he has to interact with. But he has to walk out without his shield, essentially. And he has no choice, because if he wants to keep blending in, he has to pretend that he has to obey all their commands. If he starts disobeying, then they're going to know immediately, like, oh, fuck, yeah, he's malfunctioning. You can get away with, like, you know, a weird moment of empathy showing his face, but you're not going to get away with just directly disobeying orders. So Murderbot, he puts on the uniform and he tentatively enters the room, and he is so anxious we can actively see his performance reliability percentage dropping on screen. It shows the percentage going down because his body is in such a state of heightened anxiety. It's the most relatable thing in the show so far. Everyone except Garathan is being really nice to Murderbot, and they even give him a round of applause, and he's struggling real bad to make eye contact. He can't look at them all. He literally like cannot make eye contact. It's almost like physically impossible for him to do it. And as they're all kind of clapping for him, Rati jokingly shouts for him to make a speech. Just, you know, speech, give a speech. You know, just one of those things. But Murderbot does not know that this is a joke. He thinks it's a direct order. So despite public speaking definitely being a nightmare for him, he forces himself to say something. And he says, it's my job to secure. He painfully, very painfully spits out. And then they just a moment of awkward silence. Then they all clap for him again. And so they show him, after this awkward moment passes, they show him the tampered maps. That they have this map data, and there's these sections that appear to be missing, and it looks like somebody maybe tampered with them. And they have him look at it, and they are hoping that maybe he can provide them some more information. He takes one like mournful look back over his shoulder, back at his private room where he wants to go back to, and then he has to focus on his work. So he scans the system with his mind, and he feels Garathan in there, and he kind of like bumps him out of the way. Garathan goes like, ah, as if like somebody just stepped on his toe, and Murderbot's like, oh, sorry, I didn't feel you there. He's just got so much beef with Garathan like right away for no reason. But he finds that while the maps haven't been tampered with exactly, something isn't syncing up correctly with them. Something's wrong with these maps. He doesn't quite know why. The group starts arguing about whether that thing that they fought was an animal or a monster, and Murderbot tries to use this moment to slip away, but Dr. Mensa calls back to him. She wants to know if he would have been able to know about any of this. Like, would you have been able to, like, see any of this coming or know about the missing map data or whatever? And he honestly, truthfully answers no, that he did not know about the missing map data. He doesn't have access to data basically until it is assigned. He's assigned to that area. So until they go to a place, he is given an assignment. He doesn't have access to that map data, apparently. So knowing this, realizing this, Dr. Mensa is like, okay, so what I think that we need to do now is go to one of those other affected areas of the map where the information has not synced up, and they should check that out. One of these dark spots on their radar, essentially. They should bring the SEC unit with them, see if you can get data on that sector, and they can figure out like what's not syncing up, what's going on here, what the issue is. He advises against this plan of action from a security point of view. Going into uncharted territory, essentially, is not very safe. They have no idea what could be out there, but they're probably not going to listen to him. He is invited to stay in the crew area a while they figure out what their next move is going to be, but he kind of panics and declines, saying he needs to patrol the perimeter. This is going to be his go-to excuse when he wants to get the hell away from people. Everyone is mostly open to Murderbot at this point, except for Garathan, who does not trust him at all, but everybody else is pretty chill with him. And Murderbot actually says to himself, like in his voiceover, that Garathan is not wrong to have his suspicions, because lately a fragment of memory has been popping up in Murderbot's head. There's just these 7 seconds of extreme violence of Murderbot killing people. And he does not want to think about that. He thinks that because this memory is like in his head, he might be responsible for whatever that carnage was. And he doesn't want to think about it. He's supposed to have had his memory wiped, so he doesn't know what this is. And he just wants to watch his shows and observe the crew from afar and not think about those horrible memories or have to really get any more entangled with this group than he already has. But yeah, it's been a pretty intense day for everyone, Murderbot included. And they're all dealing with the events of the day in different ways. We see Garathan visiting Bharadwaj in the medbay. Dr. Mensa, stalwart leader, is privately having extreme panic attacks. And he's like Murderbot's sensing her elevated heart rate. But he notes that there's no physiological danger, no physical danger. Therefore, not my problem. His words. Very, very nice of him. Not my problem. Whether the creature was responsible for the attack or just this random thing that happened to be in this spot in the ground that attacked them, or if the company was responsible for the omitted data in the tampered maps, the SEC unit doesn't really know, doesn't really care. He is mostly just disturbed by what he calls these relational currents. These feelings, exchanges of words and fluids. He does not want to be pulled into it. Obviously, the group was trying to like treat him like a person and get him to hang out with them, because that's just going to make things difficult for him. If somebody realizes that he's gone rogue, he's going to be in big trouble. He's going in the acid bath. He does not want to go in the acid bath. So he heads back to the repair bay. He's still in there. He's getting repaired. And just then, Dr. Mensa comes up and she comes in and checks on him. She's not like calling him from the other room this time. She comes directly in to see him, and she sees him fully repaired and fully nude. And it's worth noting that he does not have any genitals. He looks like a Ken doll, basically. It's just completely smooth. There is no sexual organs whatsoever. Probably no butthole. We don't see the butt, but I'm just guessing there's probably no butthole. She compliments him. Dr. Mensa compliments him on how he handled Arata earlier, how he calmed her down when she was freaking out. And Murderbot, he's looking at Dr. Mensa kind of suspiciously, because he doesn't know if this is like an actual compliment or if this means that she's on to him and she's trying to suss him out or something. And he's just kind of like, okay, all right, what's this lady up to? Why is she bringing that up? And Dr. Metza continues on. She says she didn't even want to bring a sec unit. The bond company, the insurance company, insisted that they get one. And she kind of feels bad, essentially. Sounds like she feels guilty that he's here. But she asks again, like, hey, are you all right? And it's like, he's clearly physically healed. But looking at his face, I think she kind of senses something. When she's asking, are you all right? She's not saying, are your wounds healed? She's just looking at him like, are you good, man? Like, what's up with you? She doesn't, you know, she's never worked with the Sec Unit before, so she doesn't really know how they're supposed to act. But she knows something's going on with him. But he is, of course, like, yeah, no, I'm good. And she's like, all right, I'll leave you alone. And this entire time, he's still refusing to make eye contact with her. And he describes this minor interaction of this woman coming to check on him as absolutely horrible. You know, whether she's getting involved with him out of kindness or because she's getting suspicious, either way, it's bad for him. He just wants to be left alone. And yeah, for someone who was supposed to be an unfeeling killing machine, he sure seems to be filled with a lot of complex emotions. This guy is a swirl of thoughts and feelings. And for somebody, again, his inner monologue is constantly filled with emotion or with personality, I should say. Like, there is a personality to him. He's supposed to be this unfeeling robot, but he can be sarcastic and sassy. He can be kind of a jerk. Like, there is... It's very consistent, and it's often very deadpan, but he's very funny. It's his reactions to things are funny. He has a personality. There's something, you know, beneath the surface with him. But yeah, all those personality traits, those emotions, they could get him into trouble. You know, they are not supposed to exist, and this group might like that they exist. This might be the one crew of people who would really revel in a Sec Unit who has a personality. But as soon as they realize that those feelings, those personalities shouldn't exist, he thinks he's going to be in big trouble. Acid bath, big trouble. So, yeah, that's just if he doesn't accidentally kill them first. That 7-second memory, you know, it keeps coming back to him. It keeps plaguing him. He's worried about it. And yeah, that's where the episode ends off. You know, of everything else swirling around, it seems like the thing at the top of mind for Murderbot is those 7 seconds that he can't quite place. They just exist in his brain, and he's very worried about them. He's very worried about them, and he's worried about the consequences of showing that he has emotions. So yeah, that is episode 1 of Murderbot. I have talked for nearly double the length of a single episode, but you know, I want to dive deep into everything since it's the first episode. But I really like the show. I think it's a good time. It's not going to win any Emmys. Probably, actually, it might have been nominated for one. I don't even know. But I really do enjoy it. I hope that if you check it out, you enjoy it as well. I definitely recommend the book. Even if you can't watch the show, you could read the first book and you would pretty much still be able to follow along. It's pretty similar. There are some deviations, but overall pretty similar. And yeah, I hope you enjoyed listening to this. It's been a long time since I've done a podcast about a TV show, and it's one of those moments where I definitely miss doing this with Jeremy. I know he'd be having a blast talking about this, but I hope that you had a good time listening. Soul Still Sold is going to take me a little while to figure out how to pronounce correctly without flubbing it, but thank you for listening. I'll see you next time for episodes 2 and 3 of Murderbot. Until then, take care, everybody. Bye.